News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
No, I'm a little bit cuter than Nick Francesco. Good morning, folks. Yes, you are listening to Soundbite, so it must be Sunday. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Pat Kay.
And you're going to, hopefully call in with your questions. I know it's a beautiful day, but, hey, you know, it's one of those days you can just kind of kick back.
That's why they made portable radios and cell phones.
There you go. You can sit around and just relax and enjoy the day. We got a lot of news. Be glad to take any of your calls on just about any question. You know, we all have opinions and never stopped us from commenting or making something up on something else. Nick isn't with us today. He's taking some time just relaxing, I think, and spending quality time. You know, we say that all the time. A lot of folks, always say, oh, I don't understand computers. And that's when it's like lighting a match underneath me. Well, then why don't you sit down and spend a little time with them? They can teach you. Instead of you always being the teacher, you can be the student. And last I knew, that was still labeled as quality time.
See, but that doesn't really work with wives or children either. If you can understand your wife. I don't get my wife. Yeah, okay.
A computer won't help you with that, Steve.
Yeah.
But you can try.
You can try, yeah.
Well, see, the problem is, though, see, we converted Shirley a long time ago. She's a PC user. Steve's still on the dark side with the Mac.
Well, I'm joining them there, so.
Yeah.
The other side.
It annoys me. She uses Word on a PC, but for some reason can't use Word on a Mac. It's 99% the same program.
Yeah.
Yep, there you go.
But it's different. That's the big thing we hear from a lot of switchers. It's different, and it just takes them a while to learn the different way of doing something.
Well, that's the same thing that they're getting right now with Vista.
Vista is so different from XP, you're going to have to learn it new anyway.
Matter of fact, that's one of the items that I'm going to be talking about a little bit later on. But one of the big things, though, and matter of fact, Nick wrote about it in his article this Sunday, and we talked about it last week, is still a lot of folks are being fed the line that, no, you can only get Vista.
That may be from that one company, but other companies will still sell you XP.
Let me enlighten the folks that care to listen. Yes, you can still get Windows XP. And the biggest concern that I would have being told, just because you're buying it from some company, this is, no, you got to get Vista, is because they have probably a warehouse full of Vista that they're trying to sell, and right now, nobody wants. You're not even seeing big businesses switch over to Vista, only from the standpoint that it's very expensive, but a lot of things don't even work with it. Because not only do you have to get more memory in it, you've got to get a faster processor, you've got to have better video. Oh, by the way, a lot of your hardware and software that currently works fine right now with XP won't work with Vista. And a lot of people, quite frankly, are getting porked off, and I don't blame them. With today's economy, hello, jobs are leaving here, folks. You know, the job market is very scarce. And to sit there and expect businesses to, just shell out thousands because this is the latest and greatest craze. No, it's not going to happen. Those days are long gone.
Well, Microsoft did announce that they shipped 60 million units of Vista.
Yeah.
And they're all sitting in a warehouse somewhere.
Yeah. How many have been delivered into customers'
hands? Have actually been purchased by customers and delivered into customers' hands?
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll talk to Ed right now in Rochester talking about Windows, XP, and Vista. Go ahead, Ed.
I'm baffled by everyone seems to promote Vista and XP. I've been using an old version of Millennium for years, and it suffices my needs with absolutely no problems whatsoever. And that's my understanding that some of you gentlemen yourself even stay away from the Microsoft software and use Linux.
Yeah.
I mean,
stick with what works.
I get baffled by when my neighbor tells me he tries to boot up his XP or Vista on two different machines and it takes him 15, 20 minutes, and I tell him my Millennium's up in under 30 seconds, and I'm in my Photoshop program working on something within 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Well, Millennium had its own issues to begin with. There were a lot of problems with printer drivers that didn't have drivers for Millennium, and scanner drivers was the other issue, too.
And then the other issue you're going to run into with Millennium is security. patches in that. You're just not going to find them anymore because Millennium, along with Windows 98 and Windows 2000, the security patches and everything else no longer exist.
Well, my biggest question is around an upgrading to, like, I wanted to upgrade to an XP system, but they kept telling me that, because I don't operate online at all, I just use it for photo and movie work at home and stuff. I still have to phone in, get a code to authorize it, so it'll extend beyond, I think, a 90-day period or something
That. You have to activate within 30
well,
days.
Well, usually,
you have to activate once within 30 days, and then the program will run.
Well, the thing of it is, though, Ed, is, I mean, I do for all my clients. Whenever I build one of their machines for them, I pre-activate it for the client. This way, they don't have to go, you know, worry about being connected or being nagged all the time. That's one less thing. They just want to, I want them just to be able to get on, enjoy the computer, load maybe some other software that they want to do and play with it.
Not, but yeah, you are correct in that you either have to be connected to the internet and activate over the internet, or you have to activate over the telephone to get the programs to work.
My biggest question is, like, when they give me my activation code over the phone, can I, like, let's say a year from now, if I decide to increase the capacity of my hard drive, get a new hard drive, or for whatever reason reformat my hard drive, can I use my the activation code they give me with my software to reload everything?
Well, what you're going to have to do is you'd got to get a new code again.
Oh, so it's a new code.
Right, well, the product code you get on the XP box.
The label that's on the side of the machine.
Is there some formula that works against the hardware components in your computer, and then that activation code Microsoft gives you is generated on the fly. You call back 5 minutes later, you may get a different activation code.
Yeah.
And when you change, this is the huge problem with the activation codes in general. If you change the hardware on your PC, Windows now thinks it's a stolen copy and you have to reactivate it. And many times you have to call Microsoft and say, I just bought a new hard drive. I'm not trying to steal a second copy. So they assume everyone's a thief.
Yeah, well, you just tell them the system crashed and you got to install a new hard drive. Right. That's the easiest.
And it works okay. I've had a couple of problems where one customer had a series of consecutive failures. Replaced the hard drive, had to reactivate it, replaced the, what was the other one? The motherboard, had to reactivate it again. And Microsoft started giving me hassle about reactivating it so many times.
Well, yeah. My situation is I use my hard drives basically like storage media because they're so inexpensive and reliable these days. Instead of burning everything to a CD or DVD, I can load up an old 40-gig hard drive that's dirt cheap to acquire, put tons and tons of pictures or video material on it, unplug it, and I just reload my Windows Millennium system in, and away I go again.
Yeah.
And whenever I plug in the hard drive, the system's on there, I'm good to go, and I don't have to phone up for any activation keys or anything like that. I just use the
Right, that's
the label
because
on the box.
Your software is so old. They started activation with, the Windows XP was the first Windows that needed activated. Office 2000 Service Pack 1 was the first Office that needed activated. And now virtually every commercial program has to be activated over the internet when you use it.
I also heard that it seems like only the U.S. industry or U.S. customers are being penalized in this. It seems like China and everybody else is able to copy our software and run as many pirate copies as they want by the millions.
You can do that here too. It's just our law enforcement facilities are better better serviced, and you'll get caught easier.
Yeah, over there they don't have any way to really enforce it.
In fact, the government
paying off who?
It was a big thing in China, especially Microsoft and the Chinese government raided some really high volume frauders. What's the word I'm looking for? Whatever the word I'm looking for.
Pirates.
Duplicators.
Yes.
Duplicators.
Right. Duplication companies that were selling massive amounts of pirated software
and records. And yep. I mean,
and
it was unbelievable.
The Chinese government kept them all. Yeah. And now that's what the government uses.
As far as internet security, you say the XP system is much more reliable than 2000?
Well, it's not that it's more reliable. It's just that it's still being updated.
For now.
So patches and security holes that are discovered in XP will be fixed.
And Microsoft said that they would extend the life of XP right now for 9 years.
I have one last question, if you'd allow me this. If I went and upgraded to XP, let's say, and I went and got my activation code over the phone, I also understand that every time they do a change to this, I guess they call it a service pack to take care of a bug or something like that, you basically download the service pack off the internet.
But that's going to be mainly, though, for things that you probably won't use because you don't go on the internet.
Okay.
You can also typically order a CD on the internet, and they will mail you a CD of Service Pack 1 or Service Pack 2. Like Service Pack 2 was like 300 megs or something.
But add one thing, though, I would discourage you from. I would first see the requirements. Look at your requirements for XP because, you know, you've won at least a Pentium 4.
I'm running a Pentium 4. It's a 2 gigahertz machine. I've got a gig of memory in it. You know, it's probably far more than what Millennium need, but the thing, you know, it just flies.
Then I would go up to XP Pro, and then that way, see, that's the other advantage of going to from ME to going up to XP, is that gig of memory that right now Windows ME isn't taking advantage of. Windows XP will take advantage of the memory that you throw at it and use it, and it will run a lot faster.
Yeah, and Windows Millennium Edition extended support was officially discontinued July of 2006. So there have been no security updates, no hole patches, you know, no nothing since July of 2006. So it would be very, very dangerous to put a Millennium machine on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the only thing I was concerned about.
Yeah.
Because I don't use it, I didn't have to worry about that. But I thought if I ever did get... Yeah, I mostly use the free internet at the library. It's you know, it's a wonderful thing to have for the public, and for me it's great. But I've got a granddaughter who's thinking of getting it for high school work, and so want to be abreast of what I need to do. Yep. So,
well, I'll tell you what, stay tuned later on. I've got this other website you're really going to want to hear about, because it's got some great controls and stuff that folks have been asking me about that I found in this Lee Hauser gentleman. Is I'm going to talk about his software after that. Anybody with kids or want better control their computers, you're going to want to listen later on. I'll be talking about that site, so stay tuned. And Ed, like I say, you can still get the XP Pro, so give it a shot and let us know how you make out.
I thank you, gentlemen. My granddaughter Julie thanks you too.
All right, good luck, Julie.
Yep. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, tell you what, he's telling us we got to take a break. We still got a few folks on the line. Stay on the line. We'll get to you as soon as we come back. And with that, we're out of here. We're Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright. Talk to you later. Good morning. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Pat Kay.
And before we get back to the calls, because we've got a couple folks on the line, I'm going to get to you in just a second. Going back to our original, our caller Ed there, just a minute ago, saying how to go with Vista or XP. Well, right now, Windows, Microsoft XP is going to wind up putting out another, they call it a patch. It's SP2C. And basically what it is, it's just going to, it's nothing major for the most of the folks out there. All it's going to do is allow a lot of the OEMs and system builders to be able to generate more numbers. Because they're starting to run out of the key code numbers because XP is so popular. And it's still going. And
well, that's a lot of numbers. It's some do the math for
the
me.
The millions of copies they've already...
It's 25 digits of 26...
characters.
Letters and then 10 numbers. So it's 20. It's 25 digits of 36 possibilities. That's well, no, this is a factorial in there somewhere. So it's like a lottery set. You've got 10 choices, and each of those 10 choices is available in 25 sets. So it's a big number. It's one of those. Yeah, it's 36 factorial minus 25 factorial. So it's a huge, huge number.
So they're coming out with another patch because they're well aware, I think, even though they don't want to admit it, that XP is going to be around. Well, they've already said it's going to be around for 9 more years, even with Vista out there right now, because everybody still likes it and is pleased with its performance. And like the other... person who's still using ME, Ed there, he's satisfied with it. It's simple. It does what he wants to do, and that's all he needs to do. All right, let's go back to the phones, and we're going to talk to Joe in Rochester. How can we help you today, Joe?
Hey guys. I enjoy your program when I can understand most of it. But
We don't understand most of it ourselves, so you know, if you do, let us know.
Hey, I got to get out of my Outlook. Is I get 40 pop-ups a day, and I want to find out what is the best email program that's going to eliminate most of all those pop-ups without me going out buying a like a spam program or something.
Well, yeah, you don't. None. Pop-ups are come on the internet, and you need to change your web browser to stop pop-ups.
Yeah, pop-ups. You want to, like, we always say here on our show, we like both Firefox for the browser and Thunderbird for the email. With the Thunderbird, you can filter out a lot of the junk and spam and all this other stuff. And with the Firefox as your browser, you can now block all those pop-ups. And they're both, free.
Okay, so if you have Firefox and Thunderbird, because that's my email, that's where I'm getting all this junk.
Yeah, it will work. As a matter of fact, when you install them, when you install Firefox, it's going to say, oh, wait a minute, you're using Internet Explorer. Do you want to import your bookmarks? And we go, yeah, and it'll do that. And then when you go to install Thunderbird, it's going to ask you, oh, wait a minute, you were using Outlook for your mail. Do you want to import that? You go, yeah. And now it will pull in all your bookmarks for Firefox and all your emails and set everything up automatically for you that you just click on them and use them.
So if you want, and when it comes up to that bookmark, you want to say yes.
Yeah, and it'll import all the stuff. So you literally, all you've got to do is download them, install them, and Joe, you're ready to go.
And it's getfirefox.com and getthunderbird.com.
Okay, guys.
So give those a shot, and, you know, I think you're going to be a lot happier. You won't get hassled with all those pop-ups, which I know, you know, going to any of the sites can really be annoying.
I got to delete the Outlook. Right?
No, just leave it alone. Just don't use it.
All right.
Okay, Joe. You know, I mean, we got to take a break right now. We still got a few folks on the line, I promise. As soon as we get back from this major break, we will, get back to you, Jim and Dave. One's in Springwater. So, all right, this is Dave Enright for Soundbites. We'll be back right after this important news broadcast. Rock to it. Rock to it, sir. All right, get down, get away. All right, you're back to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Pat Kay.
And Mr. Lambert, sir, is just doing his own thing in the studio.
I don't get to dance very often. As a matter of fact, people ask me not to.
As long as you're not shocking the monkey.
Oh! No. Well, at least this is radio. Is the webcam live in there?
Uh-oh.
No, it's not in here.
Well, it's not. That's the other thing. I got to talk to management. They list that, you know, you can watch the webcam.
Right.
And it says the time.
Yeah.
You go to click on it, it says, sorry, it's not available.
Well.
They didn't make the link, so we don't have to worry about picking our nose or scratching our butt or doing anything.
Well, they know when I'm here, it's probably best not to have it.
Well, we could turn it and aim it at you. All right. Tell you what, we'll go right back to the phones. We got Dave in Fairport. How can we help you today, Dave?
Guys, my question is, I don't remember having this problem before, but I have Flash installed in Firefox, and when that works okay, when I try to watch the same Flash video in IE, it doesn't work. It's like you can only have one or the other.
Many times you have to install Flash in each browser separately.
Yeah. Well, I installed it, and it just says, I don't think it gives you the choice to have them.
No, it doesn't. It's the browser you downloaded it from, oftentimes. So then
you got to go into Internet Explorer and download the Flash.
Well, it's not necessarily the Flash player itself. It's the Flash plugin.
Yep.
So the Flash player will load, but then the Flash plugin has to be loaded into each browser individually.
For some reason, I want to say I did that, and then it didn't work in Firefox. Is that possible?
It should work in any browser.
Yeah.
But hey, it's Windows. What do you want?
Well, I want it to work in Firefox.
I know how to
convert the Flash into like an MPEG, so I can save it. But if I can't, and I can't. I don't know how to retrieve it from Firefox. I know how to retrieve it from IE though. Do you know how to retrieve Flash file from Firefox?
You don't.
Because in IE, you can go to Tools, Internet, Options, Settings, View Files, and then it'll be the biggest file. Will be the video file, and then you save it, convert it.
Oh, you're trying to capture a stream.
Right.
Oh.
Flash anyway. Not necessarily a stream, like from YouTube, something like that.
Right, yeah, that's a streamed Flash.
Yeah, okay. Streamed Flash.
Yep. So I can capture it and get it in IE, but I look for it and I didn't see any obvious cache folder in Firefox or anything.
It may not be caching it. It may just be streaming it. There's a program in the Mac called TubeSock that lets you capture YouTube videos.
Tell you what,
there's probably something similar under Windows.
I guarantee, if you probably go to PCWorld.com.
Okay.
They've got more utilities there. Okay. You're doing different stuff. You just do a search on Stream Capture.
Okay.
They'll probably come up with at least three or four programs.
Oh, cool.
And if I was looking for the link here. If you go to adobe.com/products/flash/about,
right.
It will confirm whether or not you have Flash installed in your browser and what version it is.
Okay. Yeah, I think the new one's 9. I just loaded it.
Yeah, I've got 9.0.47.0 on my computer.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
But that will let you know if your browser is working with Flash. Your problem may not be the browser. It may be the site at the other end.
All right. Okay. All right. I'll try.
All right.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Yep.
All right. Next, we'll go to Jim in Springwater. How can we help you, Jim?
I just ordered a new compact for serial V6000,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't come with a modem. Living out here in Springwater, I have a choice between modem and satellite. If I put a PCMCIA modem in, should I worry about getting a V92? I hear that it's not, you know, readily available through most places. Should I go spend the extra money for a V92? And what about the compression, the V42 versus V44 error correction?
It all depends on what your internet provider has.
Yeah.
So whatever they support. And I would find it difficult to believe anyone would sell a modem these days that isn't V.92.
Yeah, V.92 is... but here's the key thing that you want to go for as far as modem.
Yeah.
Is they have software modems and hardware modems. You want a hardware modem.
Okay.
Yeah, the software modem relies on Windows to do a lot of its processing, which makes it cheaper. So it's the $50 modem versus the $100 modem. But it's often a lot slower and can lock up more frequently because it's trying to do so much in software.
Okay, what I was looking at was a PCMCIA Zoom modem.
This is on a laptop?
Right.
That doesn't have a modem built in?
It didn't say anything on the website, that's what HP is telling me.
Yeah, a lot of new computers, in fact, probably most new computers do not have modems anymore because so many people have broadband, they don't bother adding the cost
of
the modem.
Right, if I could have broadband, I would.
Yeah
the wireless took the space of now the modem.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, there are broadband services available anywhere. Cable or DSL are the most common ones, or you can use satellite or cellular.
Well, the only thing I could get here where I am would be satellite. What's your take on satellite? Is it worth it?
Well, it depends on how often you're using it. Most of the satellite services are about $60 a month, so if you can justify that expense.
What about the speed? Consumer Reports did a thing in January about high-speed access, and they really bashed the satellite.
Satellite is slower than a wired high-speed, but it's significantly faster than modems.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, typical modem, you get 40K. With something like AT&T's Edge network, you get about 200K. With Verizon's EVDO network, you get about 600 to 700K. Satellite is usually 1,500K.
Yeah, I would have to go to satellite.
Yeah, and that, well, you could use Edge or EVDO, too.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're about $60 a month as well. That has an additional advantage on a laptop, in that you can pick up high-speed internet wherever your laptop is.
Edge is what?
Edge is AT&T's broadband network, and EVDO is Verizon's broadband network. We happen to sell the Verizon cards in our shop at Jesse Group in Victor, so that it lets you connect to cellular broadband internet wherever you can get a cell signal, which is pretty much everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mostly designed for business travelers who take their laptops all around. And you don't want to have to find a coffee shop and have someone, you know, look over your shoulder or spill coffee on your laptop.
Okay, what about the modem optimizers? I saw an ad for this company called PGWare. You ever heard of them? They have what they call throttle that they claim supposedly...
Most of the services offer that. Sometimes they do it by bonding two modems together. So if you have two physical modems, it can run twice
as fast. But then, again, you start slowing the machine down because now you've got software doing something the hardware should do.
And the other way they do it is compressing it more at the other end.
Uh-huh.
Or they'll cache it. So instead of you going to, say, YouTube and downloading a movie directly from YouTube, they've already cached it at your local service, so then it can download faster than downloading from the internet.
Right. Well, I've considered satellite, but I don't know anyone that has it, and I'd hate to go out and spend all that money on the equipment and everything and then find out that it's not much better than what I had for dial-up.
Yeah.
Well, satellite, you should get about 1,500K, which should be a lot better than the 30 or 40K you're getting on a dial-up. We've had several customers buy it. In fact, we've got a couple of customers that use it on their RVs, and they say that that it works for, they can drive for a couple hours before they have to pull over and re-aim the dish.
Okay.
So, Give it a shot.
But for home, once I've got it set up, I should be all set.
Yeah.
And that should do me for, like, streaming videos. Would that be fast enough?
Maybe. But at the borderline.
At the smaller sizes.
Audio would work, though.
Should have no trouble with audio.
Like listening to radio stations?
It's going to be a little laggy. I mean,
radio should be fine. If you get a 56K stream or 128K stream, it should be fine.
Yeah. Right now, if I want to listen to radio over my laptop with the dial-up, the buffer can't keep up with the streaming or can't keep up with the broadcast. So you'll play for a while, and then it'll go back and it'll start the buffer. I can't keep ahead of the buffer.
That's pretty typical.
Yeah.
Would satellite help alleviate that?
Yes, it will help alleviate it.
Mm-hmm.
It where you could listen to it without having to try and figure out what they said for the past 5 minutes?
Yeah, it should help alleviate it, but it depends on the stream you're downloading and how much data they're pumping.
Yeah.
It will be better than
a
modem.
There are going to be factors.
I realize that, but the big thing I'm concerned with right now is spending $300 to $350 on a satellite system that I'm not going to be happy with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, check their return policy. A lot of them have like a 30-day money-back guarantee or something like that.
All right, listen, we got to cut it off here. We got to take a break. We got a few more folks on the line. Stay on the line. And also, folks, when we come back, got to tell you about this great website that a lot of you folks and parents are going to want to hear about. So stay tuned. Welcome back, folks. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Pat Kay.
All right, a couple things here I got to talk about. One was gracious enough to drop this in. And pass on that both CBS and AP have confirmed that Merv Griffin is dead. Don't know how he passed away. But
yeah, I saw this thing on the news yesterday.
Right, the Price is Right.
He's been ill while. No, while he created dozens. Well, Merv Griffin talk show was his big one.
Yeah.
But he created dozens and dozens of TV shows.
So, I mean, he's going to be greatly missed. I mean, he's right up there with Dick Clark and a bunch of the others. You know?
Yeah.
All right. I've been telling you for the past half hour or so about this great site that I found. And Steve, I believe, has already posted up a link to this. And it's a gentleman called Dave Lehauser. And what Dave has done is, I happened to stumble upon him by accident. I was looking for a countdown clock because I like to have it up there and it'll count down the days, the minutes, the hours, the seconds to a particular event or something else if I'm trying to keep track of something. And he's got a lot of shareware up there, but his main focus is mainly internet and business. And helping people with security and blocking and everything else. This countdown clock he did merely as a lark. But what Dave has on there, and a number of folks have been asking me for software like this, that they wanted to restrict, say, put passwords on certain programs to allow it so, say, kids or somebody else can't get into a particular program. He's got that. He's got time lock software, where if you want to lock down and block, say, the number of times the kids can get out to the internet.
Yeah, you're only allowed in a half an hour of IM a day and then go do your homework.
Yeah, you can have full control. He's got internet pass locks. It can also monitor where your kids are going and not allow them to go certain
sites. The big problem there is that a lot of times to do their homework, they need internet.
Right.
So it's a very, very tricky. Oh, let me just IM Joe because he got the assignment right and then before you know
but
it,
you can have,
it goes by.
A lot of parents have been concerned, and I know I've gotten a lot of requests. You know, I'd like to be able to do this with the kids or restrict how much time they get on there, because a lot of parents, if they work until 5 and the kids, you know, say are in high school and they get home right at 3 and they're on the internet for the next 2 hours instead of, like you say, doing the homework when they could be getting that done or other stuff, you can control that. They can get onto the computer, but they just can't get out to the internet. And you have full control of that. And times and everything else. So this guy has really put together a lot of good programs. I would highly recommend that if you're, you know, a concerned parent and want to do that, check out some of his programs. It's even for businesses, too. If you want to monitor where some of your folks are going on the web during your business. Because, I mean, technically, they could get you in trouble, too, if you're not blocking stuff. And he's put together a lot of good programs, and they're very reasonable. I mean, just the countdown clock that I got was like $9. That's cheap at half the price. Mm-hmm. He'll give you 10 days to try it out. So you can try it out and try it. And then after that, he requires you to pay for it. You know, that's a whole trouble nowadays. I mean, a lot of the shareware and everything else folks use. And I know Nick is a strong advocate. And both you and I, Steve, have always said, If you're going to use it and you find it helpful, then pay the nominal fee. That's what keeps shareware around and keeps these programmers up and running.
And it typically goes right to the guy that wrote the program, not some big faceless company.
And they'll usually, quite often, if you like it, you can send comments to it for improvements and everything else, and it just winds up adding more features. One that we use quite often is Music Match.
Yep.
And, I mean, that's a great little program. It cost me $15, I think it was a few years ago, and I have gotten more use out of that and more fun, and the guy keeps sending me updates.
Yep.
So support your shareware, folks. Check this David Lehauser's website out. It's lehauserresearch.com. We have a link on our website. And I think you're going to be pretty amazed at the products that he has on there that you'll find very useful. Listen, folks, that's the sound that we got to kind of kick out of here. Pat's sort of ready to come in and, you know, take my mic off me and say, quit! But we'll be back right after the top of the hour in all the news. All right, we're back to sound bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Pat Kerr.
And we're going to talk to Randy in Rochester. Randy, how can we help you today?
I got a question for you. I'm going to be replacing a motherboard. Problem with the original motherboard, started smoking, and I happened to look in the caps are rounded capacitors.
Mm-hmm.
And also the regulators. That's what was smoking. There's two regulators on it. Before I put the new board in, is there possibly anything that regards to like the power supply caused this or what normally, you know, what?
No, there was
surges.
I forget what company it was, but there was a mass problem with millions of capacitors.
Can I say the name of the board?
It wouldn't matter. It's the company that made the capacitor.
Yeah.
Apple had the problem. Dell had the problem.
How about the name of the capacitor company? Can I say that?
Well, it's the ones I've seen have an X on the top of them rather than a K or a T.
Well, all electrolytics will.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Well.
Yeah.
It was a big problem. A couple of years ago, it started, and we're seeing that after a couple of years, these bad capacitors are swelling. Sometimes they'll leak, and eventually they'll stop working.
Uh-huh.
Apple has a repair extension, where they will still fix several models of their computers, even out of warranty, that have this capacitor problem.
The e-machines were experiencing huge.
It's whatever company made this batch. There must have been millions of bad capacitors entered the market.
But to answer your question,
it probably isn't anything you did. It's just a bad capacitor.
Like there's five capacitors, and four out of the five are all rounded.
Yeah, they bulge out. Eventually, they'll split and start leaking.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The board may be able to be repaired by somebody who's very, very adept at such types of repair.
I wouldn't want
to
try it.
But to answer your question, But to answer your question, it's probably not a power supply problem.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, you may want to check with the manufacturer of that board to see if they also have some sort of recall or repair for these known bad capacitor problems.
The only reason I wouldn't recommend repairing it is only because of, you know, if it's leaked there, what other strain did it put on the other circuitry that you spend the time and effort for, you know,
I mean,
less than $75, you can get another motherboard replacement that you know is going to be good, and, oh, by the way, it'll come with a warranty.
Right.
Well, Dave,
versus trying to replace something, trying to get in there and multi-layer boards.
Yeah, resoldering a multi-layer board is tricky. You can do it if you're handy with a soldering iron.
I'm good, but I'm not that good.
Yeah.
Okay, but that was basically my question. If it was something that did this or it just happened to be...
There was a bad batch of capacitors a couple of years ago, and it's taken a couple of years for the problem to surface.
Yeah, well, this is about 5 years old, this board, and it's just all of a sudden she started smoking. I opened her up, and she's coming right out of the air.
Well, they say
right
smoking is hazardous to its health.
Well, computers run on smoke. If you let any out, they quit working.
That's right.
Guaranteed.
Yep. But yeah, in the Apple world, if you have an eMac or one of the early generation iMac G5s,
mm-hmm.
There is this repair extension that, if your computer stops working, there's a couple of different symptoms. The video will futz out. It won't turn on, or it turns itself off.
Right.
And if you can see the swollen capacitors, if you pull the bottom cover off, there is this repair extension on many models where they'll fix it even out of warranty. You get a new motherboard.
Got it. My other thing is now I'd have to call Microsoft to get the...
Have to reactivate your Windows and all that mess. But basically, you know, you can tell them that you're replacing components. We've seen that happen. We see that work okay a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
People that try to abuse it and are trying to activate it on multiple computers facetiously by saying they're upgrading, Microsoft has cut them out, only letting them reactivate once or twice.
Right. Okay, my friend. Thank you.
All right. So try that. And, you know, like I say, you might. Well, it's a good excuse to go get another motherboard. You know, upgrade the machine. And while you're at it, oh, maybe get a better processor.
Well, then you're going to need a new processor, memory. New RAM, new hard drive, new video card.
Yeah, well, you just say, honey, you know.
Everything
you know,
but the case.
Yeah. You know, we got
to
get.
No, you need a new power supply to get the 12-volt
well, yeah,
for the
P4. Yeah, you got to get 12-volt converter. So, you know, get a whole case.
Everything but the case.
Well, no, the power supply usually come in the cases, too.
Yeah, well, there
new
you
power
go.
Supply.
Yeah,
all
everything
right.
you wind up doing. So, all right, Pat's telling me, you know, we got to make room here for Mr. Glenn Lambert as he's going to fill us in on Merv Griffin and all the other news that needs to be told.
Thousand-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
No, like I said before, I'm Pewter. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
I'm Pat Kay.
And Nick is just enjoying some quality time, like we got into before. He's just
kicking back and relaxing. There's some time travel involved. A seminar on time travel will be held yesterday.
Where his wife, you know, he just needs some time off, as we all do, you know.
I mean, well deserved on his part.
All three of us, you know, once in a while, we got to take a week off and just sit home and chill out and do some stuff. And we have what they call lives once in a while.
Well,
it's hard to believe.
My big mess coming up now is my wife and I are going to be moving from Greece to Parrington. our closing date has been pushed off four times now.
Oh, much like Vista.
Much like Vista. So right now we're hoping we're going to close on Wednesday. So next weekend we'll be moving. So anyone that wants to come and help out.
I'm busy. I got to sweep my lawn there.
Well, we got one of those pods, which is really cool. It's this, you know, like a cargo container.
Yeah.
But it filled up so fast.
They do. It's just like a hard drive. Yeah. You know, they filled up to the capacity and
no, it's really neat. They drop it off on your driveway. You fill it up. They take it to the new house and you empty it. And you get it for a month, so you get 2 weeks here, 2 weeks there. It's not as hectic as getting, you know, like a moving van, mm-hmm. where you have to do everything in a day because you don't want to have to rent the van for another day.
Right. Yeah.
So it's kind of neat. It just annoyed me that it filled up so fast. So well, I'm debating: do I get a second pod or do we get the moving van anyway?
Probably better safe.
Yeah.
All right. Tell you what. Let's go back to the phones, and we got Tom in Rochester. How can we help you today, Tom?
Hey guys, I love you guys. I listen to you every weekend.
Thank you.
Got a little problem on mom's computer. I'm not sure everything on it, but she said she tried to download McAfee, but accidentally downloaded the home version. Can't get it out of the computer now. Tried everything, even called McAfee itself. They couldn't get it out. She tried. Now she's trying to download other firewalls and security systems, and they won't do it because McAfee's in there.
Yeah.
So, do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, Tom, what you might have to do is take it to a local repair shop,
because
this is one thing, it can be done.
Right.
But what I don't recommend, and I do it all the time, though, is go into the registry.
That's what I was thinking.
I know what I'm doing, and I can go in there and do a search and remove all the references to McAfee.
Right.
It's quite a pain in the butt. You almost get carpal tunnel, because it puts it in so many places, and you got to remove one by one, bless you, the references to McAfee. But yes, it can be done. And most
don't
places,
do it at home.
Right. Yeah, you can probably do. You're looking at maybe about an hour's worth of labor.
Wow. I'm assuming you went to add remove control panel and that's not working.
Everything in safe mode and everything.
Yeah.
Everything. But she is downloading now the Windows XP version of their security system. And it seems to be...
Oh, don't. I wouldn't go to Microsoft's. That's the worst one of the bunch.
Windows Live One Care.
You know what you could do, Tom?
Yeah,
now, she's just starting out with this machine fresh?
No, it's a couple years old. It does have a lot of memory and RAM and everything in it.
Well, what you might want to do is just, you know, to save yourself some cost, is if you back up your documents and settings and all that, and then just wipe the machine and, you know, spend an afternoon just reloading the operating system. That way you can do it yourself if you got the original disk, do it yourself for free, versus paying somebody.
And then you can go with the free AVG antivirus and the free Zone Alarm Firewall and use the free program.
SpyBot and Adaware, like we recommend for our Tangle.
I have posted on our link list, McAfee has instructions on how to manually uninstall different versions of McAfee under different Windows versions, so that's something to try, too.
Yeah, check out our, go to our webpage, soundbites.org, and you'll see links. Mm-hmm. And under links, I heard this on the show, and Steve will has it listed there.
Oh, okay. But if not, well, your shop's right down the street from me.
Oh, okay.
Dave, so I, you know.
Yeah, if you want to bring it in, like I say, you're looking at about an hour's worth of time.
Okay.
All righty.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, it's just not easy getting those in, and depending on what other update, they tend to collide. All right, let's go back to Dave in Canandaigua. How can we help you today, Dave?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon. Yeah, it is afternoon. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm a Wild Blue subscriber, satellite internet service provider.
Oh, good.
And the previous guy that called there, I wanted to throw him a couple ideas. Now, I need it for my business, so I went with their most expensive package, about $70 a month.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look out. They do have a bandwidth limit. In other words, you can only download so much in a month period, or they'll throttle you back.
Okay.
And there's a few things. You can't really do VPN. You can't do voice over IP. But other than that, I mean, and there's a little bit of latency when you actually click to go to a website because you got to go up to the satellite, down to the downlink station, which is in Syracuse for us.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's actually pretty good. The download speeds for large files, I was getting 200K, between 1 and 200K as an average. That's pretty good.
Yep.
Cool.
So, and you got to look at whether that's worth the money. That's the real trick. So.
Right. And some of the other satellite internet services, there's HughesNet and Starband, and then the Wild Blue that you just mentioned. So there's competition involved, too, so you can check out the different policies and check out the return policy to see if any of them have a trial period before you, you're committed.
Right. And mine was both ways. You don't need a phone hookup to do anything.
Yeah, a lot of the early satellites were satellite down and modem up. And that's sort of the way a lot of the internet services work now, is that the upload speed is significantly slower because most of the time what you're uploading is just a URL, a text string.
Yeah.
But for businesses who are uploading, data, they're running servers, things like that, you need a higher service.
Dave, you said there's a download limit. Do you know what that is?
Well, for me, I was paying about $70 a month for my service, and that limit was 17 gigabytes, which is pretty hefty. I mean, you gotta download a lot of files to use that up.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of big files.
Yeah.
So I did have a question about Zone Alarm, too.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've got the free version. Oh, one more thing. I went to download a new version of Adaware from download.com.
Yeah.
And it had a Trojan in it.
Oh, really?
Ooh. Yeah. AVG free caught it. So, anyway, yeah, and Adaware, I'm sorry, in Zone Alarm, when I go to configure zones, I want to configure an internet zone, basically everything that comes through my satellite modem. And I'm wondering if I just tell it the IP of the gateway for that, is that good enough, or do I need to actually specify the exact IP of that's been assigned to the modem?
Well, you can do an IP range, 192.168.0.0 to 0.255, or whatever your IP range of your internal network is.
Right, that's what I do for a trusted zone.
Yeah.
For an internet zone, I want basically anything that comes through the modem. So that would be the IP address of the modem?
For an internet zone, probably.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah.
And Zone Alarm, it knows enough to distinguish the packets and where they're coming from.
Yeah, but you may need the higher version to do that.
Yeah, you might have to go. You might have to go for the paid version to start working with some of these features, which, again, you want the extra security, it's well worth the price.
Well, all right, but I mean, what's the point of Zone Alarm if I got my own internal network and that's that should be a trusted zone?
But do you, now,
right?
So you've got your own router,
right?
Well, that's got a built-in firewall, which is depending on how you lock that down, should be pretty secure there. Zone Alarm would just be an added feature that you're just adding another layer on top of that.
And,
so,
and oftentimes it's used for catching things trying to get out to the internet.
Yeah.
So if you get a Trojan or virus, say through email, not coming in through the internet, then it can catch that going out.
Yeah.
So from that aspect, yes, if you put that in, that should cover you. Since you've got a hardwired router, you should be in good shape.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that takes care of me.
All right, sir.
Yep.
I want to thank you very much. All right, next we'll go to, oh, we lost that one. I will go to Lance in Penfield. Lance, how can we help you?
I actually have several questions, but I'll ask the important one first. When I try to copy a file with Windows XP, Mozilla, I try to copy a file to my CD drive E, it asks me to put a, to mount a readable, I mean a writable disk in drive E. When I've already got one there, or if I don't, I put one in, and it still keeps asking me the same question.
That's depends on what CD writing software you're using. Typically with CD writing, you use an authoring program like Dragon or Roxio.
Yeah, and Nero.
Or Nero, and that burns the data to that disk.
Yeah, well, there is an option that I have, the one you just mentioned. But I also have tried using Windows Explorer.
No, that one Windows program.
Yes, it doesn't work that way. It's you, okay. You have to download the file to your local computer, and then you open your Nero or Roxio.
Use a program that's designed to do it. Because
and then tell
Quasimodo.
That program to burn the file to the disk.
Yeah.
Well, it tells me I've got files waiting to be written to the disk, and that's as far as I can.
Right. And then once you burn files to that disk, you can't burn any more, typically. On an R disk, typically write once. If you get an RW disk, you can erase it and then write to it again.
What I would recommend is deleting them out of that Microsoft program to burn them. And go into your Nero program, select the files that you want to burn to the CD, and use that. It's more reliable.
And they fight back and forth. The built-in Windows burning software tries to use something called packet writing.
Yeah, I've seen it fail.
Well, it tries to treat your optical drive like a floppy drive, where it can write to data, and then it only writes packets, so then later on it can write more packets. But that leads to compatibility issues, and then that disk will only work on your computer until you finalize the session or close the session or whatever the terminology they use is.
Yeah.
And that gets to be more of a hassle. It's usually just easier to open Nero, select the files you want to burn, and then burn them.
My Nero doesn't like Windows 2000.
You might have to get a different version or an update.
Yeah.
If you go to the Nero's website, they have a couple patches so that you can download it and update your software a little bit there to get it to work with Windows 2000.
Yeah, not many things did work with Windows 2000. It was intended to be the server OS, and then everyone would use 98 on their desktop, but that never really caught on like that.
Yeah, so, okay.
All right.
I got another question. Well, you already answered one, that I can't add any more to a CDR. A quick question. Cell phone I'm calling from. How private is it?
It's not. Depending on whether you're on an analog or digital signal, if it's an analog signal, it can be picked off very easily with a home scanner. The digital signals are a little harder to break into, but we'll let Chris, our radio guy, although, did you get out of it before cell phones got big?
No, I have to confess, I didn't hear the question entirely.
How secure or private is a cell phone?
Reasonably secure these days.
Especially if you're
sometime
on a digital
in the 90s, they had to stop selling scanners that would pick up the cellular frequency.
Oh, okay. When I try to Hewlett Packard PhotoSmart printer driver has a very interesting option, print both sides manually.
Okay.
Right, you print one side of the paper, you turn it over, put the paper back in, and it prints the other side of the paper.
All
right. Which can be done,
well, Lance,
but the
we got to cut it off
easier.
Right now. That music in the background tells me that Pat has to do some important work there at the board and, let the folks that sponsor this show air their commercials. You should listen to them because they're great folks, and they keep us going.
Subtle economic dramas.
Yes. And, that's what's kept us on the air for 17 years, and we're coming up on 18 this Labor Day, which is only, 3 weeks away? I believe 3 weeks away, and, doesn't seem funny. It seems funny that we're going to be starting 18 years. You know, I sit there and wonder sometimes.
Gosh, we're old.
Yeah.
I remember when you guys talked about Ataris and Commodores.
Yep. All right. Yep. Well, tell you what. Pat's going on, and he wants the time and to play his commercials, so I'm going to let him. Welcome back. You're listening to Sound Bites, and I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Pat Kay.
Getting down. Getting close.
Somebody has to do it.
Yeah. Hey. All right. Tell you what. We'll head right back to the phones because we got Bud in Buffalo. What can we do you for, Bud?
Hello.
Hello.
There we go. I have a question about a wireless network. We have an airport for our household here, and I relocated a little bit further towards the back of the house. Now my wife's computer bumped out of it, and I was just wondering what kind of options I have.
Move it back.
No, you want to keep the marriage going.
Yeah. You can add a second router somewhere in line, which will pick up the signal from the first router and then amplify it along.
Okay.
That's called a WDS, or wireless distribution service.
Do you recommend Apple hardware in that, or is it
well
generic?
it's easiest to connect the devices from the same company. So if you already have an airport router, it'd be easiest to go with another airport router. The Airport Express router is that's one of its main features. It's small, easy to plug in, and can be used as a WDS. Another option is, depending on which of the routers is your primary router, you may be able to put a bigger antenna on it. Some of the Airport Extreme base stations have an antenna jack where you can put a bigger antenna to get more coverage.
Right. Well, this one didn't. I know you had one for a modem and an antenna outlet, but this one didn't. I guess it was the bottom model or something. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you have the modem option, then you have the Extreme.
Well, the Airport Extreme it's one of the annoyances that Apple does with having so many products with the same name but completely different on the inside.
Right.
The first Airport Extremes were white, but the before that, there was an airport router that was also white. The Airport Extreme router, some of them had modems, some of them did power over Ethernet, some of them had the USB port, some of them had the antenna port. And now the current Airport Extreme router is an N router, has four or three wired ports for hooking wired computers up to, and has a USB port for hooking up a hard drive or a printer. The earlier routers would only do printers. But no modem anymore,
okay.
Yeah. And no antenna port to put a bigger antenna on.
Uh-huh.
Now, it is theoretically possible, and there's companies that will do it. There's a company called QuickerTech that sells external antennas for the computer. So you can put a bigger antenna on your computer as well,
uh-huh.
Or you can open up the airport base station and mount a bigger antenna to wherever the internal antenna is connected to.
Mm. Okay, kind of like the old CB days, huh?
Yeah.
Okay,
so
the
easiest thing is to put an Airport Express router in to amplify the signal.
Okay. All right. And any comments on the new iMac?
Yeah, we didn't get a chance to talk to him yet. It's
They're pretty.
Faster clock speeds up to 2.8 gigahertz. A 20-inch model now for $1,199. They discontinued the 17-inch model that was $1,199. I personally kind of feel they should have kept a 17 at like $899, $999, because
right,
that $1,000
right.
barrier.
Sure.
But getting a 20-inch flat panel monitor with a pretty decent processor in it, the hard drive speeds have jumped. The screens are now all glossy.
Right.
Which business people probably aren't going to like because of the glare from fluorescent lights and windows. But in the home arena, the glossy screen gives you very bright and vibrant color. So photographs and movies are going to really be better. From a service standpoint, I'm a little concerned that the glass front panel is only connected by magnets.
Oh.
There's 14 magnets holding the glass in, and hopefully
Steve, glass isn't magnetic.
Well, that was my first look at it, because the iMac that has the screen itself, and then there's a black border, and then the aluminum chassis. They've changed from a white plastic chassis to
looks
a silver,
like a big iPhone.
Aluminum chassis. Yeah, kind of like the iPhone, and it looks a lot more like Apple's Pro monitors that were
right.
aluminum chassis. So that black border on the glass is where the ferrite material is embedded for the magnets to adhere to. So I wondered why they have a black border there, and why not just put the glass to the edge of the screen? So that answers that question.
Actually, I missed the 17-inch monitor because I don't have a very big desk, and to fit a 20-incher, and that would be tough.
A lot of our customers bought the 17s because of that. In fact, while supplies last, the old models are on sale at Jesse Group, 924-1920. I think, we're open until 2 o'clock today. So that for people who don't need the latest and greatest and super whiz-bang, when a new model comes out, the old models drop in price. In this case, since the new models are better at a lower price yet, usually they come out the same price the old ones were, the old models have dropped in price even more. So it's a great time to buy.
Well, the 17-inch entry model, I think, was 1919 or something, was the lowest price I'd seen.
Well, the 17-inch, there were two 17s. There was a 999 model with a combo drive and an 1199 model with a DVD burner super drive. They actually didn't change much in price because the 20-inch for $11.99 is a slower processor. It's a 2.0 gigahertz. The old 17-inch for $11.99 had a 2.1 gigahertz processor. So it's a little strange that the 17-inch, since they didn't actually replace the 17 with anything.
Right.
But now, the 20-inch monitor for $11.99, if you've got enough space to fit. Now, what we're seeing happening is over the years, all these computer hutches have been made for 15-inch monitors and then eventually 17-inch monitors to fit the monitor in the hutch part. Now all of Apple's monitors are widescreen, and all the hutches have been designed for square screens. So we'll probably see more of the hutches changing their shapes eventually as well.
Plus, you're going to have to sit on the other side of the room just to see the entire screen. the entire wall pretty soon.
Yeah,
I have the 20-inch at home, and I love it. It's great for movies. If you have the space and can squeeze in a 20-incher, you also get more pixels both across and up and down. So you can get more on the screen, and it does look pretty good. So what I'm happy about the new iMacs is you can get even more memory into them.
Yeah, the old ones, the first ones peaked at 2 gigs. The last generation were 3 gigs, and now this model can go to 4 gigs. Which people are talking now, the 24-inch model with the Core 2 Extreme processor, 4 gigs of RAM, you're only looking at like $2,200, $2,300 for a really, really high-end machine. Great for video work, audio work. So we're seeing a lot of people looking at the iMac instead of, say, a Mac Pro with, say, a 20-inch monitor where you're looking at $3,500. So it's almost a $1,000 premium to get a quad processor.
Right.
Now, if you're doing production and professional film work, then that quad processor will come in handy. And then the 8 processor models are even better. But the iMac is a really, really good machine these days.
Right. And then they have new software out, too, don't they?
Yeah, the new iLife suite and iWork suite. They've added a spreadsheet into the iWork suite. So now you have word processor, page layout.
Numbers.
Numbers is the spreadsheet, and then Keynote for presentations. So they're really coming up against the Microsoft Office suite with Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. And the new iWork 08 suite can read and write most Word, Excel, and PowerPoint files. But it's almost a paradigm shift. With Excel, you open it up and you get a giant grid layout where you start putting your numbers in. With Numbers, it's more designed for the casual home user, not an accountant. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot more font and graphic ability, presentation ability of the numbers. So it looks really neat on the way they've designed that. And then the new iPhoto, the scrubbing feature is really cool. They found that most people have ended up with thousands and thousands of photos in their library. So the new feature in iPhoto is it creates events based on the day you took the picture. So instead of 5,000 pictures, you might have 100 events of 50 pictures each.
So you group all your birthdays and
right because yeah most people things. Will in even in the Kodak Easy Share Gallery, the other photo management programs, you bring in your photos, first thing you do is make an album of those events.
Right.
So now the software does it for you.
Now, are they going to be porting that over to Windows or that in the work?
Probably not. It's and highly doubtful, because that's one of the key reasons and differentiations with the Mac is the integration, the seamlessness, and the software bundle. You might be able to find PCs cheaper, but you're not going to find an equivalent PC with that type of software on it for anywhere near the price.
Yeah, I know with the iTunes, I use it at work on a Windows computer, and it's great.
iTunes for Windows is really great. The new Safari browser for Windows is a really interesting alternative. And the speculation on that is because the iPhone uses Safari.
Oh.
So all the Windows users who've bought iPhones the browser on their phone can now be working almost the same as the browser on their desktop, so that it makes a more seamless interaction.
Okay. Tell you what, I hate to cut you short, but we got a few other folks I'd like to get to them, too, before we at least get to Bob in Pittsburgh, who's been waiting, and he's got another Mac question. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi. They're massive, the iPhone and the new iMac you were talking about. What's up with Leopard? Is that still on for October, and is that worth waiting to buy a new computer? Because my daughter's going to college until that's really available.
Well, that has been an interesting question. They didn't mention Leopard hardly at all in the new announcements, other than saying that the new iLife works on Leopard fine. Leopard is the next generation of Mac OS. 10.5 is probably going to be the version number.
So they're not leaking anything, even a speculative?
Well, it's
still on target for October.
Right. They haven't changed the target. It's still on target for October.
They usually start a month before or sometime before start shipping computers that they'll upgrade for free, or do you have to wait until the announcement?
What they've done in the past, and we have no idea if they'll do this in the future, is you get a 30-day window, so that if you buy a new computer, and within 30 days, if the new OS comes out, you can update to the new OS for a nominal shipping fee. They are doing that now with iLife 08. If you buy a new computer now, except the iMacs, which have iLife 08 on it now, you're going to get iLife 06 on all the other models. You can upgrade to the iLife 08 for $10 shipping and handling. So it's likely what they'll do. Now, they were hoping for a June release of Leopard, and earlier this year they pushed that off to October. And one of the ironies, I think at least, is that Apple had a record quarter shipping something like 1.7 million Macs in a quarter. And I think a lot of that is because people stopped waiting for Leopard. You're in May, you're in June, Leopard's going to be out in June, I'll wait. But now, you know, we're looking at August and September, October, you know, it's going to be a couple of months.
And kids are already going to be in
school.
Kids
are already back
to school.
So
they're losing that window of opportunity. They might be able to hit it for the Christmas.
Right.
They'll have it for Christmas rush.
Yeah, at this point, it's hard to say wait. You know, if you can wait, if you don't really need a new computer, you may want to. But on the other side of that coin is a lot of people wait until, you know, the 10.5.1 will come out. Let everybody else be the pioneer and wait till the first patches.
Get the bugs out,
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
All right, no problem.
Well, it's just like anything. If they wind up getting a little more horsepower for their dime, like you say, once that comes out, and if they want to upgrade, they'll be able to.
Yep.
And that's on both sides of the world.
Yeah.
Well, Pat's playing the music, which means we got to get out of here for news break. So stay tuned, and we'll get right back to you. Welcome back. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Pat K.
And he sort of cut me off guard there for a second.
All right.
No, that's not your fault, Pat. I'll tell you what, we'll head right back to the phones. We got Pat and Gates. Evidently, he's got a printer problem. What can we do for you there, Mike?
Yeah, listen, this is the printer. This is the problem I got. I got a Brother HL1440 laser printer hooked up to my laptop. And when I go to print out using a specific program that's on my laptop, the printing comes out mirrored and upside down. But it works fine with my other programs on the print on the laptop.
Yeah, that's usually a preference in the page setup for that one program, so that you can print on, say, a T-shirt transfer and then iron that T-shirt. When you print it mirroredly and then iron it down, it comes back as a positive. So take a look in the document setup or print setup, and there's probably an option in there for mirror or backwards or reverse or something.
Right, there was, and what we did was when I was on that program, I tried hitting it to do it mirrored and upside down and see if that was going to rectify it, but it didn't. It still prints mirrored and upside down.
So it's ignoring the preference and doing it anyway.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm saying
Mike, do you have your radio on in the background? We're hearing that in the background.
Oh, yeah. Lower that radio.
Yeah, please.
Okay, sorry about that.
Yeah, we're just hearing ourselves talk to you. And
yeah, so the here's the thing. We just got these new laptops, and then they transferred over all the programs and stuff, and that's when I started having a problem. This worked fine on that particular program before we got our new laptops.
Does the new laptop have a newer system on it? Is it running Vista?
No, it's running Windows XP.
Okay. Service Pack 2?
I don't know.
It may have been a newer service pack. You might want to try going to Brother's website and downloading the current driver.
You know, actually, I did. I went to Brother's website. I downloaded all their drivers and stuff. And I also found a patch that said if you're printing mirrored, Mm-hmm. Here's the patch. Okay. So I downloaded that, too, and it still doesn't work.
Hmm.
Try uninstalling and reinstalling?
I did that, too. Yep.
Does the program have a print preview function?
Yes. When you go into the print preview, it brings it up perfectly. You can see just how it's going to print the right way. All, you know, right to left to right and not mirrored. But when you go to print, it comes out backwards and upside down.
So now, it's a printer OS problem.
Your other programs work fine with this printer, correct?
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Then what my suggestion would be is for that particular program,
if they have an update.
See if they've got an update to correct this issue, because it's not the printer that's causing the problem.
Okay.
It's the software that when you're telling it to make this particular change.
That's what I say, but my tech support that I have with my company, because this is my company's laptop and it's their program, they're telling me it's my printer problem. And I'm telling them, how can it be my printer problem when it worked fine on this program before? Well, there's got to be a problem with their program.
Yes,
and if every other program prints properly and only this one program doesn't print,
it's you got
that
it.
One
you
program's
gotta tell
fault.
Them that if they, well, that's how you can go back to your company and say, well, wait a minute. How can it be my computer if I can go into Word or if I can go to this program and you name a bunch of programs and it all prints correctly?
Right.
How can it be? And, you know, you might get a blank look and, maybe they'll then scratch your heads and come up with a better answer.
Have you tried uninstalling and reinstalling that program?
Yes, we did that too. I uninstalled and reinstalled the program. And here's the kicker. They told me to install another printer and see if it prints fine on that. And I did do that. And yes, it did print fine on the other printer.
It's that program and that printer combination.
Yeah, correct. Their print driver. Well, that program and the print driver that they wrote for that particular program. See, each program, have a bunch of listed printers that it supports. So that printer and that program, they've got to do, within that program, they've got to correct their printer.
And they're each fighting each other and blaming the other.
Yeah, but it's very easy for him to just say, sorry, guys, it's now back to you, because, no, it's not my computer, because if the printer works with everybody else, it's your driver for that printer that's not working. So you got to fix your program to work correctly with that driver.
Or they'll say, use a different printer and ignore you and you're out of luck.
That's what they're doing. They're telling me, use the other printer and it's only your problem. Nobody else has that problem. But somebody else did have that problem, but now they're just telling me it's my own problem.
Yep. Well, yeah, they're not going to admit that maybe four or five other folks have it.
You might want to check on, I'm looking for it here, Brothers support forums. You might be able to post a question there. Somebody else might be having a similar issue.
Now, is this a custom-built software package?
For my company, they're custom-built program.
Do you know what it's written in?
Oh, that I don't know.
Is it an Access database, or is it like a Java program or a C program?
A C program for the hard drive?
No, written in C.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. See, sometimes if it was like an Access program, you might be able to do a tweak in Access. If it's a Java program, it might be a tweak in Java, but if it's something like C or C++, then they'd have to do it at their end.
Uh-huh.
But the brother has a, I'm looking for the specific link now, brother has some support forums where you could post a question and see if anyone else has something similar and other suggestions.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to go to brother's website and ask them for help.
I have to agree with Steve, though. Do a deinstall and reinstall of the program.
The program and the printer. Try uninstalling both of them at once.
Sure.
Okay, I don't think I did both of them at once. I can try doing that.
Yeah,
The other thing I guess I can try to do that I haven't done is hook up the printer to the USB and it'll say it found new hardware, but not put in my CD. Go to the website of Brother and download the drivers right from Brother.
Yeah, the latest driver straight from Brother. Don't let Windows use its own drivers.
And not put in my installing CD that came with the printer.
Right.
And then see how that works.
Yeah.
That's about the only things that I got left to do. Other than that, I'm ready to go shoot somebody.
Figuratively. No, you don't want to do that.
Figuratively.
Yeah.
But, all right.
Yeah,
thanks a lot, guys.
It can be a big hassle. Frustrating, especially when you're going back and forth.
It's a custom program, so they don't have anyone else to blame. So it's got to be the printer. But the printer works fine with every other program. It's got to be your program.
And then I always love to throw in back to tech support, because I've run into that. I've had other companies sit there and say, well, you got to wipe the machine. Wait a minute. Why would I wipe a machine just because your program won't work? I mean, that's the easiest way to get you off the phone.
Yeah. But if it's a program that well, your company wrote and you have to use it on the company laptop. Yeah, you know, that's a pain.
Well, and then it's the company's problem.
Yeah, well, then the company should give him a new printer.
Yeah, if, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
There you go. There's an option for you.
Well, they already gave him a new laptop, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it.
Yeah, if the company software doesn't work on the company laptop with your personal printer, make them buy you a new printer that does work on.
Yeah.
I mean, and buy the consumables for that printer. Maybe that'll work.
If you can get away with it.
Yeah, really. All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones and we'll talk to Al in Fairport. How can we help you, Al?
How you doing, guys? I got a laptop that's about a year old. It's a Dell laptop. For some reason, every time I go to do Microsoft updates, the yellow shield in the taskbar appears, disappears, and constantly keeps going that back and forth, and I can't get any of the updates.
Well, have you just gone to, within Internet Explorer, you just go up to Tools,
okay.
And under Tools, there's a Windows Update. You click on that, that'll take you right to the update page.
Yeah, and there may be something wrong in the auto-update feature that if you manually loaded the updates, then the auto-update would start working again.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, just go into Internet Explorer, like I say, click on Tools, and there's an item there that says Windows Update. You click on that, it'll take you to the web page.
Or you can go to windowsupdate.microsoft.com in IE. Yeah. Now, this is one of those cases where you have to use IE. You can't use any other browser.
Correct.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. Speaking of Microsoft. Again, there are really two other items here that I wanted to bring up. One, as Nick would always point out, this is patch week again. It's coming Tuesday. Microsoft plans to roll out 9 security updates, which will correct a number of issues with both Windows, Office, and Internet Explorer, and its Visual Basic development software. So if you're using any of those products, as of, it's Tuesday night, Pacific time, might as well wait until Wednesday because the site will be flooded anyways. On Wednesday, go and double check for any updates because it's your security there that, you know, if you're using Internet Explorer, you don't keep up with the updates, your machine can be hacked. And then we get folks calling the show saying, oh, my machine is running real slow. Well, yeah, because you haven't done a lot of the updates and you need to do that. All right. Those are the mellow tunes. It tells me another show was ended. I want to thank both Steve and Chris for, helping us out here. It's been a joy. It's been a slice. And the person that's calling on the phone, sorry, folks, we can't get to you. It just ain't going to happen. You got to call earlier. It's a 2-hour show. So, you know, we went through quite a few calls.
A lot of calls this week. You can go to the forums at soundbites.org, post your questions there. A lot of people can help answer them.
Yeah, you know, for the few times that we can't help you, you know, the great crew over on the forums will be able to help you out and get the questions answered and help you out of a lot of things. So, again, for me, Steve, Nick, who is taking a well rest, you know, this is Dave Enright in Soundbites. See you next Sunday.